My first test this morning is best known for the redevelopment of Dublin's Docklands, including what is now the Three Arena, the Point Depot, in fact, the Grand Canal Theatre, Vicar Street, just to name a few, and an involvement in the Convention Centre. But for this morning, we're going to concentrate on talking to him about his new idea for housing. Harry Crosby, you're very welcome indeed to the programme this morning. We were just talking about your new idea upstairs and talking about when you actually bought the Point Depot, people thought you had lost the plot.
Well, yes, it was very strange because I have worked on the docks all my life, and I came from an old-fashioned family from the North Strand where there was a ferociously strong work ethic. So at the age of 15 or 16, and the summer holidays, you went to work. So when I was 14 or 15, I was able to drive a forklift on the docks long before there was health and safety. So
had you got a licence?
Not at all. And I was laughing the other day about, I was down at, you know, the two chimneys at Ringsend?
Yes.
Well, we were delivering to those when they were being built. And I said to the foreman, can I go up to the top? This is long before helmets or anything. And I went up to the top and had a look around. I must be one of the few people that's been up on those chimneys and look around. So anyway, I used to go to the rock shows. I love them. And I was driving down along the quays one day and I saw a sign for sale on the Point Depot. And it would be like seeing a sign on the GPO because it was government owned. And we used to deliver in there. There were trains, there was carriages, there was engines, there was everything. And it was incredible. And within a split second, I said, I can do rock shows. And the ones that I go to, they're okay, but I reckon I could do it better. And it was the, you know, the showing off of utter and total ignorance. But I did it. Being an entrepreneur, I had complete self-confidence to the point of madness, but it happened, and now it's the third busiest arena in the world.
There you go.
And then we did the theatre, and you know, when I went into the bank guy about building the Bord Gáis Theatre, he just closed the book and he said, I don't want to talk to you anymore. The idea of building a theatre down on Pier Street, but now it's massively successful, Everything turns. Everything changes.
Well, I'm putting that first because you're going to tell us another idea that you have.
Yeah.
which people will say, he's now really lost the plot.
Well,
tell us about
it. Well, no, yeah. I mean, when you say it's a new idea, there's nothing new. I mean, this is the idea of putting a polder, which means using the Dutch technology for taking the special ships that suck sand and gravel out at the sea, and they bring it in and they pump it very quietly and they fill up land. And that has been, like, the Point Depot was built on found land, and it was called the Point because before the rest of the quay wall was built, that was the point where the land met the sea, and not a lot of people know that. And the Bord Gáis Theatre was built on found land because just behind it, when in the 12th century, Dublin was a walled city, and the Eastern Gate came out just behind where that is now, which would have been a shingle beach. And in the 12th century, there was a massive outbreak of leprosy in Dublin, believe it or not. And the site of the theatre was a leper colony. And unbelievably, on the other side of the city, on the Western Gate, what became Vicar Street was a leper colony. So you have sitting in front of you the proud owner of not one, but two leper colonies. So beat that. You're not dealing with muck here.
Right. Okay. Tell me how you would solve the housing problem in Dublin.
Okay, so
you saw somebody sleeping rough down in Hanover Square.
Yeah, I knew all about this, but Hanover Quay, where we live, I came home one dark night and it was freezing cold and lashing rain, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I saw two young fellas asleep in a doorway, and it really upset me. Like, really, really. Although I knew all about it, I actually had never seen it. And of course, I went over and I didn't know what to do. Would I give them money? I couldn't bring them home. You can't do that. They can't speak English. They're people who have no chance in this world. They have no skill. And people say that the world is fair, and it isn't fair. And the next day I tried to give them money, and then I heard all about the Father McVerry thing, which I didn't know about. But that led to the whole question of houses, which I don't know anything about houses. I don't build them. But then I discovered that there are huge numbers of young people who can't buy a house.
Correct.
This is not people living on the streets now. I had moved on from that. And this is not underprivileged. This is the sons and daughters of people who work in RTE, people who are whose fathers are barristers, solicitors, people who have worked hard in their exams, who've got the marks. There are no houses. And however bad it is now, when I did the homework on it, in 2 or 3 or 4 years' time, it's going to be hugely worse than it is now, because we're building these enormous floor plate offices that march right down along the river. And there's no doubt that the development is going to jump across the East Wall Road into what's now Dublin Port. The same on the other side. It will go in. And there's nowhere for the people who work in these places to live. Never mind the people we've now. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. And it's going to become an enormous crisis. So my proposal, I would be to build a polder. And I'll tell you where it is. And because we're on radio, there's no way I can show you the map. If you can imagine, you're sitting on a double-decker bus up in the front seat on the top where the kids sit. And you're driving out through Fairview, heading out towards Dollymount, and you go under the bridge at Clontarf, and a couple of hundred yards, you see the sea on your right-hand side.
Yeah.
And over on the horizon, you see the skyline of Dublin Port. And if you look along that skyline, halfway up, there's a stop, a square where it stops. And the idea would be to go from that end of the port right over to Clontarf, roughly where the baths are now, and to build a new colonnade or a new promenade along there. And then all of that to bring in Dutch contractors who do this stuff all over the world. They bring in the material from the sea and they pump it very, very quietly, and you fill it up as dry land. There would be 250 acres in that, roughly, now very roughly. And each of those acres would be worth 25 million shovel ready in today's prices. So now there are problems.
Yeah.
There's huge environmental issues because you have bird populations.
Yes, yeah.
But there will have to be a compromise found at some time between birds and people. There will have to be. You also have the Talca flows through that. But at the moment, because the Talca is a tidal river, most of the time it looks like an open sewer, and it runs along the back of the industrial buildings. And the idea would be to divert the Talca so that it runs along what's now the seafront of Clontarf, through a new green park, beautifully made, and it runs into a weir, which means that it is a full and deep river all the time, so that it's not tidal, and that you would put a fish ladder in and restock the river, because it used to be a famous fish river. Now, all of that skill has to be brought in and expertise, but that's the basic concept.
Money, money, money.
Well, money, 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 it doesn't cost anything. The Dutch contractors whom I met and I've spoken to, they tell me that the job would cost in or about 200 million, that it would take about 18 months to do. It's simple, it's straightforward. They're using the technology all over the world. You know, have you seen those images in Dubai of the new islands built?
Yeah.
Those are the guys.
Right.
So they come in and they do that. So you can either pay them in land, or you can sell a piece of land to pay them. But either way, you finish up with about 250 acres, give or take, paid for, no cost.
And then okay. What?
Now, then, the next thing is, you've diverted the Talca. It's running, it's on a weir, you have a beautiful park. So that means the skyline of a new park does away with the industrial backdrop, would be hidden. Then you bring in a master consultant planner of town planner. And they lay it out in grids and American block system, the exact same as the streets at the back of Hanover Quay in behind the Marker Hotel. Those beautiful little leafy streets. This is not high rise. This is 4, 6, 8 story buildings. And as each block is laid out and streets, everything is tree lined. It would be a beautiful place to live. There would be a new town centre. There would be parks. There would be squares. You could bring the Lewis from the Point Depot down another stop so that the Lewis would come to what would be the new seafront. OK.
Yeah.
Then each block would be offered to the market for development. Not sold, but they would get a right to develop it within a master plan framework using the materials as laid down. Very like, again, like Hanover Quay. So they would build it, which would have a mixture of accommodation, probably 20% offices, shops, whatever, everything that you would have in a whole new big town. And when it's sold, the money that they have paid for the land goes to the government, which is free because it costs nothing. And it's worth 25 million an acre. Now, if you wanted to bring the price of the houses down,
yeah,
you could make the area free of stamp duty. You could make it free, the materials coming in, free of VAT. And
they're not going to do
no,
that.
No, but wait. You see, you have to remember, this is all different because they're going to be making gigantic money from the land, which came to them free. So all bets are off here. And then instead of the contractor having to pay interest on the land while he's building, he pays at the end. So therefore you have no stamp, no interest, and no, what was this? I forget what the third one was. The aim would be to bring the cost nearly down to half, and that they would be sold to one person, would be allowed by one house that they would live in, or one apartment that they would live in. There would be no buy to let. There'd be nobody allowed to build or to buy big blocks of them.
Are you not trampling over all sorts of constitutional rights there? I mean, you've the right to buy. You've the right to buy.
Buy one. Yeah. But I'm saying landlords would not be allowed by 10 or 12 to rent them out. That's what I mean.
As a policy.
And therefore, because everything would be as cheap as it possibly be, then you would have do away with all this stupid nonsense of social housing, affordable housing, whatever. That Mrs. Bouquet, Tuppence Halfpenny looking down on minor snobbishness, which I hate. I really hate that. Everybody would be the same, and this would create homes for 65,000 people. There are problems. There's always problems.
Yeah.
But when I began to work on this, all the people that I work with, generally over the years doing big stuff, every single one said that they would work with me on a pro bono basis to get the polder built. Now they'd be pitching for work afterwards. But for the moment,
and you said, what role would you have?
Whatever they wanted me to be,
right.
It doesn't matter. But there would be people on, there'll be a 6 or 7 man team who would be have a collegiate well of knowledge, a vast pool of experience, hugely influential people, like David Brown, the president of the Royal Institute,
yeah,
like Martin McGrath, the senior engineer of O'Connor Sutton Cronin, Con Casey of Smith Williamson doing the finance, Carthage Conlon, a very famous lawyer. And I have been advised politically all the way through by a guy I'm working on another job in Gorey, Minister for State Michael Darcy. So there's an enormous well of collegiate knowledge available free. And what we would need is access to the government. This would only work if the government completely come in behind it as a unique one-off situation. Now, there are problems. First of all, resistance to change is a huge problem, and the fact that it's a nature reserve,
you can fix
the river, you can fix the fish. We don't know how to fix the bird thing. That is beyond my skill sets. But all that is being offered today is not a plan. It's a suggestion that has been tested to destruction by very, very capable minds. And there's enough in it for to have the debate. And that's why I was so pleased when you invited me on, because when I wrote the first letter to the Irish Times and they didn't write the second one, I thought it was dead. And the response the next day in the Irish Times was the usual, your man's a half-wit. It's harebrained, all the usual stuff. That's not true. I'm not harebrained, and this is not mad, and it could be made to work. It doesn't need any money, and it could create homes for 65,000 people, and that alone gives it the right to be discussed.
Right.
And that's all I'm... that's why I'm so pleased to be here.
Have you approached any senior people in the government?
No.
No,
I haven't got that far, but I have a team who will work for me. We have the basic information, this big drawing here, which you can't see in the radio.
Yeah.
But if people can imagine what I said about going out on the bus, it's about change. But nothing is new. There has been land reclamation since the 17th century.
Yeah.
And there's a big square of land. And if somebody can figure out, the thing about the birds is the single biggest problem that we can't solve. But at some time, maybe not in my lifetime, this will happen. And we will leave together.
What about the port?
No connection with the port. Nothing to do with the port.
Right. And I mean, you were saying, I think in that letter, that the fuel for airplanes...
Yeah, but that was all. That's all a different... That's all a different issue. The fuel for the airline, there, all those silos that you can see on the horizon, a lot of those will be and have already become redundant because they'll be pumping fuel out on a pipeline to the airport, and they're relocating a lot of those silos over to the other side. But getting involved with the port is would bog you down for years and years. So this has nothing to do with the port.
Right.
This is a concept of creating the polder technology to make approximately 250 acres of land, which will pay for itself. It's free when you once you pay the Dutch contractors. There's no new technology, and it's worth 25 million an acre, and it can give homes to 65,000 people right in the middle of Dublin, where you would want to live, and this will become a place where you would die to live in.
Right. David Brown, RAAI, Institute of Architects in Ireland, was also coming up with a somewhat similar suggestion.
No,
for Sandy Mount.
I took him and another eminent architect over to Clontarf, and we drove right around this, and we did the homework, which resulted in that simple sketch there. They then decided to take it over to Sandy Mount, which I think is wrong.
Why?
Because I think Sandy Mount is very beautiful. On my way here this morning...
I'd say lots of people in Clontarf think Clontarf is pretty beautiful.
Well, OK, but I mean, it is mudflats. You've got the industrial landscape in front of you. Yes, I accept that. But I think what we would create is also quite beautiful. There would be a beautiful new deep river running along the front in a green park with walkways and new parks and a whole new... big, big town in there. But the idea of filling in Sandy Mount was a bridge too far. And I told them, I don't want to be involved in that. They shouldn't have gone out to the public because it makes us look like nutters. Because if you drive along Sandy Mount this morning, a beautiful morning with the sun in the east, the idea of filling it in is simply outrageous.
Well, but I presume that the front there is already built on reclaimed land.
I don't know.
I'd be surprised if it weren't.
Huge amounts of down around the port are reclaimed land. As I said, Sir John Rogerson's Quay, there was a man called John Rogerson who built a wall, which became his wall. And even when I was a young fellow working on the docks, it wasn't properly filled in behind. The land behind Sir John Rogerson's wall was 20 feet down because they hadn't got enough stuff to fill it because they didn't have the Dutch technology we have now.
Right.
So this is not new. There's nothing new here. It is radical. And it's you have to think outside the box. But some form of this is going to have to come up.
Right. Not surprisingly, a lot of calls coming in. Great idea. East Dublin has been an obvious opportunity. We should open up the seaward side of the Dart. Another says, don't be daft. Plenty of space all around Greater Dublin for housing, just needs political will and high density. Polder idea, very expensive for expensive, lucrative apartments downtown. Well, you said it's not going to.
It's not exactly not that.
Okay. No. Marion, what about the rising sea levels and flooding? I think that's a very important question.
We would just build higher. Simple. You get the datum information, and you go whatever height you require to give you 200 years free of climate change rising. That's an engineering thing, which is a simple solution.
I was reading about what the Dutch do, and they had their walls and they had their windmills and
yes,
they had all that. And they were saying that now that has changed.
Yes.
And in the light of rising sea levels, they have within their building... the usable building, they have places where overflows of water can go.
Yes.
And would you be doing the same?
No, because this would be a single wall right across from the edge of the port over to Clontarf, a whole new promenade with a beautiful cycle track and a walkway and benches and trees and lined in cafes and bars, and the sea would never come in beyond that again, ever. And the Tonka...
hold on, you never say never.
Well,
OK,
I mean, we would design it so that it mightn't happen for 200 years. And the Tonka would have a weir where it goes into the sea, would become non-tidal, and you'd have this beautiful deep river all the time, surrounded by trees and parkland with fish in it, if that's possible.
OK. Marion, is Harry Crosby talking about filling in the seafront area of Clontarf, he'll be destroying property prices in Clontarf on people who've paid for a sea view. Leave Clontarf alone. There's loads of land on the city side of the docks, and that comes from Lucan.
OK. The answer to that is, if you're sitting up on your bus again, heading out, and you see the houses along the left, there might be, I don't know, 100 houses. This is 65,000 people can be accommodated. And instead of them seeing mudflats, and instead of them seeing the industrial skyscraper over the way, they'll have a beautiful new park with a beautiful river in it, and the sea will be just a bit further down.
They want their sea view.
I know. Well, then, what are we going to do? In 4 or 5 years' time, there are going to be hundreds of thousands of people with no homes. That's why it is radical. I accept that.
Right. Anyway, this gentleman certainly doesn't want Clontarf to... That has jammed on me now for the moment, so I can't go to them anymore. Can I just address... You've been building all your life.
Yeah.
To me, it is a complete mystery that the politicians tell us that we own enough land to solve the problem.
Yes.
The politicians tell us that they have assigned enough money to solve the problem. And they've been saying that now year after year after year. Mm. And there are parents with babies and 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds staying in hotel bedrooms still. What is wrong? Why does, if there's the political will there and they say there is, if the land is there and they say it
because
is...
Because it's like the people on your screen. Nobody wants change. The big institutions that own this land, they sit on it, they mind it, they don't want to give it away. This idea is radical. But it's one huge idea which can be done, and it doesn't need money. It's not only self-financing, but will throw up an enormous cash surplus. And yes, it will affect people in Clontarf momentarily, but Clontarf will become a much buzzier and nicer place to live in over a period of 10 years. And I firmly believe that this is worth a very serious debate, but it will only happen if the government, at the very highest level, if we put a team together to do it, we'd need to have a direct access into the Taoiseach's office, because people will do everything to try and stop it, or at the very least, the Minister of Finance's office. But it is worthy of debate. That's all
sure.
I'm saying.
But, you know, if you look at the records, more or less everything that people apply for planning permission for, politicians object. They say they want houses, they say they want accommodation, and then they object.
I know. But to repeat one thing, this isn't about disadvantaged people. This is about our children, your children, the people out there behind the screen, the people who have gone to college, 25-year-olds. My own grandchildren are coming up now, and they will shortly be looking around for a flat to live in. There isn't any. Years ago, people like you and I would have helped our kids to buy a house in Ringsend or Rialto or Fairview. That's gone. Those houses are out of reach now. So unless some radical version of this is done, there is going to be a situation where there are hundreds of thousands of people, which will curtail the growth of the city. And we cannot keep building big floor plate office blocks to attract tens of thousands of people with nowhere for them to live.
OK.
And they don't want to live 25 miles out in Ratcool. They want to live in the city. We need more density, not high rise. This idea, the highest building here is eight stories. It's about density in the middle of the city.
OK. That was the sea levels one. Sounds like a great plan. My only concern would be, if the sea levels rise with global warming, would this land be submerged eventually?
No.
Because we hear of the difficulty of people building on floodplains.
Yes, but this is not a floodplain. And this would be built with modern datum lines way above where anything could happen. It would become the safest place in the middle of the city, actually.
Dublin is too big already. Why not move the port? No city has a port in the middle of a city these days. What about development in the rest of the country?
I only know about Dublin. I get nosebleed out beyond the canals.
Right.
That's only a joke.
Some people will take offence,
oh,
including
sorry,
yours truly, actually.
Oh, I'm very sorry.
Harry Crosby is delusional. If these houses, apartments were built, they would be huge money in an area like that. And whether he likes it or not, that's the way it would go.
No.
And that's possibly true.
No, it's not true. It is not true. The government owned this. The government would put a... Try and forget about thinking about the huge thing. Think about each separate block, which is about 2 acres, which would be worth, in land terms, about 50 million. Developers go in, they bid for the land, they build the buildings, they pay the government at the end. If they wanted to do this properly, take out the VAT, take out the stamp, take out whatever, and there's no reason why these couldn't be built at about half of the price of the going rate.
But man's point is a fair one. In a few years down the road, they'd be worth gazillions.
Yes, but that's the free market. The person who buys them first, if we're able to sell them a flat for 300,000 and they sell it in a couple of years' time for 6 or 7, good luck to them. The other big bonus that could happen here because of the scale of this is that the government could bring in and ask banks to bid for a group mortgage scheme so that every single one of them would have the same mortgage with the same bank on the same tracker rate, which means if you meet the criteria to buy one of these, you would have a pre-set up mortgage at a pre-set up price with everybody paying the same. Because they will be so popular, of course they will shoot up in value. That's not my problem.
Right, I was shown a little cottage in the heart of London that had at one stage been a council house. I think it might have been 1-bedroom, 2-bedroom cottage, under Margaret Thatcher, sold, obviously, to the owners, and it went recently for £1 million. More than £1 million.
Yeah.
So that happens when things are very convenient.
That's not our problem. Our problem is to create houses. What happens to them afterwards? Once we are able to sell them to the first user, the people who need them now, if they decide to take a profit, that's the market. You can't interfere with that. There's nothing we can do about that.
Too complicated, too technical, too expensive, wrong area, too many objections. Cheers, this person says.
Okay, there would have to be a new planning process just for this with no objections allowed. Or else you'd never get it built.
That was what was done down in the Docklands, wasn't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
Would have to be done here.
Yeah. What a great idea. Well done. I hope a statesperson in the Dáil is listening. And that's from somebody in Cork. Marion, Harry has a great idea. But perhaps the location should be beyond the towers at Poolbeg.
No, the sea is too deep.
Yeah, that's right out in the sea.
Yeah.
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 Hi, Marion. I have a family living on the marina in Dubai. And right outside their apartment, looking into the water, they're extending the marina, reclaiming land. It's amazing to see the sand getting larger and darker. They keep reclaiming the water, says Rena in Cork. Well, that's the principle you're talking about.
Correct.
Yeah.
It would take 18 months of pumping. And it would cost 200 million. That came from Holland last week.
Absolutely love your man's idea. Such brilliance. I'm just wondering about the issue of rising sea level. Same question. Well done, Harry. Dutch reclamation in Ringaskiddy 40 years ago and again now. Another one says, what your guest is saying is idiotic. David McWilliams has already suggested a much more intelligent and simpler issue. Build on the Docklands. It has twice the capacity of what he is proposing, and it would not require filling in the sea in Clontarf or come at some environmental cost. Where's that?
That means moving the port. Moving the port is a non-issue because to build a new court would cost billions and billions and billions. Whereas this land is free and the port should be left where it is and become linear. And what's happening is the ports around the world that used to be donut shaped when I was young, where the cargo was laid out all around the place, that's now gone. Containers could be landed on a train right beside the ship and travel up a line, and the real port should finish up in Portlaoise. an inland port, and all that land could be subsumed back into the city. But that won't happen in our lifetimes. This could be started now. Right now.
Okay. Harry is a visionary. This is another text. Harry's a visionary and a radical thinker. And his idea is genius. Sadly, we don't have a government that believes in vision or radical thinking, nor do the people have the open minds. And that come from... I've lost the name there. Marion, this man is attempting to destroy a UNESCO... biosphere. I will personally lie down in front of any machinery if this travesty were to proceed.
Well, first of all, there won't be any machinery. It'll be at sea. And the second thing is, I started the whole thing by saying the biggest problem is, what do we do with the birds? But, and I repeat, but, there has to come a time when the needs of humans and birds will maybe come together. I don't know how to solve that, but there are people out there who do.
Right.
And we have access to them.
Okay.
We have a cunning plan.
Right. Well, it'd be very interesting to see. Actually, I thought most of the callers would say your man is nuts, you know.
Yeah, but they haven't.
But they haven't. No, well, these are of the ones that were sent in to me. Maybe they were censored.
I'm sure there's ones in there you'd be afraid to read out.
Yeah. tell me... how have things been? You know, it's been a turbulent 10 years for all sorts of people, but including yourself.
I got caught right out in the open with my trousers down in the middle of building the Point Village, an enormous scheme for hundreds and hundreds of millions. And the tide went out, and my friends, the bankers, let me down. And the one piece of advice I would give to all young entrepreneurs out there is, don't play golf with your bank manager.
Well,
he is not your friend.
Right. Can I just say, you just suggested with your proposal, Dan, you do a deal with the bank as if the bank would be your benefactor, you know, that everybody could have the same mortgage and everybody could have the same tracker.
I know, but they don't have to be your friend to do that. What happened with me was, it's a very simple thing. When the crash happened, I invited everybody from the team was down, three senior bankers from AIB. I said, we had three choices. We keep going, we stop, or we fill in the car park. And they said, keep going. And we kept going, and they said, we'll stand by you. And next minute, the loan was sold, and I had opened my account in AIB when I was 17. My mother gave me 25 quid. I had a little green book, and I was with them my whole life. And from the day they sold the loan, I never got a phone call returned ever again. So the point of my story is, don't play golf with your bank manager. He's not your chum.
Right.
But anyway,
well,
to keep it positive, I did my deal with NAMA at the beginning of last year. And I have another 9 months to go where I'm working on a set salary, and anything I'm doing and all my own stuff I'm doing as a consultant. And then when I get going, I will, if I make any profit, it's my own at the end of that time. Or if we make any loss, it's my own. We live in a world of very, very turbulent, as you said. But I have been working my ass off, and I have three or four big projects just about ready to go.
Vicar Street?
I'm building a new Vicar Street in Goree for the southeast, and I have been working on that with Minister Michael Darcy, who's the local Goree TD. We've been 3 or 4 years at it now. We are nearly got it done a few times, and the local councillors were bickering and whatever, but we now have a deal, and we're going to build a little state-of-the-art 1,500 capacity venue, and in a big square beside it, we're going to have the capacity to put up a 30,000 foot marquee, so that we could have a pop-up RDS, so that maybe twice a year we could do a trade show, a boat show, Christmas comes to Santee, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's now in place. And in Dublin, I'm going to build a 188-bedroom rock and roll hotel, which we're going to sell the new concept of rock and room, where you can go with your squeeze, go to the gig, have your few pints, go to bed, house your father, and get up in the morning, go to work. Tell me what part of that they won't love.
Well, there were objections, weren't there?
There was, yes, but I got through, and I now have planning permission.
Right.
And I'm also working on down in Hanover Quay, where I live, in the last 18th century warehouse in the port. Next door to me, I rented out a warehouse to U2 many, many, many years ago. And they're now going to open that as a rock and roll U2 museum. And we're going to turn my house into a little boutique hotel with two floors up above and a little flat for myself and your one. And we're going to downsize and maybe sail off into the sunset. I'm working on that. That's a work in progress. I'm making all this sound very easy, and it's not easy.
No,
it's,
I didn't think it was.
It's a huge amount of work. I've been 10 years trying to get myself back up and running, but I'm up and running.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, when you say the banks let you down, I mean, I've heard so many people in similar situations saying the bank let you down. Problem is, you signed to borrow it.
I'm not whinging. No whinging whatsoever. But all I'm saying is that don't believe the bullshit. If you, and the other piece of advice, and I will speak very slowly, do not sign personal guarantees. Okay. End of story. And don't play golf with anyone from AIB.
Listen, I presume there are other people giving about the other banks in the same way. And I should point out that you've been through the NAM experience, as you said, but you can't talk to me about that.
I can't,
that yet.
Because we signed a, what did they call them, a gagging order. So
I don't think they called them gagging orders.
Confidentiality
clause. I think they call them confidentiality.
Yes. Anyway, yeah. So therefore, I did my deal, as I said, at the beginning of last year. I have another 9 years to go and 9 months. I'm on a set salary, which suits me fine. I have no problem. And at the end of that, I can do what I like. And then I will be able to create wealth again, which I will do if I'm still alive. It's not looking good, but here I am.
Well, I hope you are still alive. There are more texts coming in. Please ask Harry if he has fully recovered from the Lyme disease, which he suffered from years ago.
No, my balance is bad.
Really?
Yeah. I can't ride. Weird thing, they say you never forget how to ride a bike. I cannot stay up on a bike.
Really?
And the odd time I stagger around the place, not because of drink, but that's the... But you see, I went blind for 4 months. I got it really, really bad. And I had it for 9 months before I was diagnosed.
Right.
So I had massive problems. I was in hospital for three and a half months before they figured out what was wrong. It's a dreadful disease.
And where'd you get it from?
I was in America. I got a bite. I never heard of Lyme disease. And it was only long, I went to the hospital here and they told me I'd ringworm because you get a ring thing on the back of your leg.
Right.
But now everybody knows. But at that time, it very nearly killed me. My doctor told me I wasn't going to make it.
No. That's cheering, isn't it?
I know, yeah. I know.
Very, very hard. But actually, you have a kind of an amusing tale about a friend of yours dying.
Oh, yeah, this was the one when I told you about Paolo Tullio.
Yeah.
Well, he was a great friend of mine, and I met him...
People will remember him from the restaurant.
He was a restaurant, yeah. And when we were young, he was a great friend of Paul McGuinness before he was famous.
Yeah.
And they used to go to Trinity, which meant they were upstarts, and they drank in the Bailey where I met them. And then I didn't see them for years. And then when Paul was famous and the band began to record at the Docks, I met them all again in the old Dockers. Anyway... Paolo used to have a radio slot on Thursday. And after that, he used to come down to me and we would mess around in my house every Thursday. He had a guitar and we used to sing together and have a glass of wine. And when he got sick, I went to see him near twice a week for a long, long, long time. And when he was dying, I asked his family, could I go and see them? It was just the last few hours. And when I went in, they were all sitting around the table and Christa Borg, who's married into the family, was sitting at the top holding... Paolo's hand. And they had all said goodbye. And I said, there's no point in me saying anything else. But what I will do, I'll sing a line of a Beatles song that we used to sing together. So I sang the thing and I said, I wonder, can he hear that? And Christa Borg said he squeezed his hand three times like that. Isn't that a lovely
That's
story?
Lovely. Yeah.
So there you are.
That's lovely. Well, listen, Harry, it's food for thought. There's a lot of people that think it's a good idea and we need good ideas at the moment because we have a big problem to solve.
This is radical. It needs people to be able to step change. It needs people to be able to buy into change. but it doesn't need any money. It's self-financing. It will create homes for 65,000 people. It's there right in front of us. The technology is there. All we need is the political will to come in behind it with the full stamp of the government, and this could happen, and it could happen fast.
Very good. Harry Crosby, thank you very, very much indeed for talking to us, and we'll take a break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.